8 o'clock hour, Sports Radio 610. I'm Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. He's out all week. I'll be in through Wednesday. And then Seth, it'll be fun. I don't know who's hosting with you on Thursday.
Thursday, I think Reginald and Show are doing I don't know if they're going for 12 hours or what.
Oh, that's
right. I'll be on for a couple of those hours. But,
yeah, you said like...
I didn't know I had the day off, so Reginald asked if I would join them for a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, it'd still be... Yeah, sure. I was planning on working anyway, so thank you for letting me know. I actually had a vacation on Wednesday, and then seizing it back from me.
Friday, we're all chilling on July 4th. Hopefully, you are as well.
Yeah.
Having a extended weekend once again. Those are always good. The NBA league year officially changes over at midnight tonight. At that time, nearly 180. Players will become free agents officially, and that includes the 9 players who have already agreed to new contracts to date. 142 unrestricted free agents and 36 restricted free agents. The Rockets got one of those big fish via trade last week, bringing in Kevin Durant, and now you turn your attention to free agency and see who they're going to try to pair Kevin Durant and their young core of now Jabari Smith Jr., Alperen Şengün, Amen Thompson, etc. And that'll be an interesting follow. Now, the audio that I was going to play here, I totally blanked on this. This is not current audio, like as in Rockets reacting to Kevin Durant. This is two former Rockets that were talking about Kevin Durant.
This was after the Clippers lost to the Warriors in the 2019 playoffs.
2019, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, Pat Beverly and Lou Williams of the Clippers got up, and I think it was Shelly Smith asking them a question. I didn't include all of her part in here, but Shelly Smith basically asked, was there something more you guys could have done to try to stop Kevin Durant, who just absolutely went off in that elimination game?
I mean, he's Kevin Durant.
I promise we tried.
We didn't roll over. And we didn't just say, hey, man, you know what? Just come on, give us 50 tonight. Of course not. You know, he's a hell of a player. The shots he took, you know, he made some tough shots. If you was a coach, what'd you tell us to do? Thank you.
We tried everything. All right. So we tried everything. We had several different coverages for KD, and
they didn't work.
sometimes you come across special people, and it doesn't matter what you send to them. It's no scheme. It's no defense. It's no nothing that you can do with special people. He's one of them, and he showed it tonight.
That is some of the best audio that I've heard. I love that.
Yeah. The facial expression, too, on Lou, it was funny because Beverly was kind of going after the reporter almost like, well, what would you do? He was getting defensive for no good reason. I think she was asking a very fair question like, man, was there anything else you could have done or what have you? And he's asking for her basketball expertise. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to fault the writer for not having the options. Like, he's just curious. What could you have done? And so as Beverly's kind of going in on the attack, that was the second time he had questioned her about what she would have done. Lou kind of steps in almost like as a mediator. I'm like, hold on a second. Let me approach this from another angle. We tried everything. It was awful.
Oddly enough, that's the same postseason that Kevin Durant ruptured his Achilles. It happened in the finals.
Yeah.
But that's 2019 Kevin Durant that they're talking about. And now you've got the unicorn Kevin Durant that really doesn't appear to have fallen off, you know, much since coming back, you know, from an Achilles. And now he's going to be 37 years old by the time, or shortly after the season starts, I think it is, this year. Do you think that opposing defenses, opposing players are going to have, like, similar reactions to a 37-year-old plus Kevin Durant in the next 1 to 3 years for the Rockets?
I think there is an element of Kevin Durant in his game where so much of it is just about his length. The like geometry ages well, and your ability to shoot when you're as long as he is, whatever drops in athleticism he's had, he's very capable for making up for it. For him, really, honestly, my biggest concern is just, all right, how good are they at load managing him and keeping him healthy for the playoffs? Because if you look at the minutes he's played the last couple of years, he's played more minutes per game in the last couple of years than he has since he was in his late 20s.
Yeah.
They've just really relied on him to lift up and pick up a team that was not as good as this current Rockets team. So I think they're going to be really careful with him, and it might be frustrating at times during the regular season. He might get frustrated with it, but as long as he's healthy in the postseason, which is a big if for a 37-year-old, then I'm not worried about it. I think that, yeah, that's, you go back to Tim Duncan or any of the other big men that just, you just can't account for their ability to shoot 6 inches taller from where you can block.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the frustration potentially. Look, there's so much that could happen down the road. It was actually one of my concerns during the season, you know, when Kevin Durant was being talked about as a possible trade target for the Rockets. And, you know, we had the conversations of, boy, you know, what's it going to take at that point in time to land Durant ahead of the trade deadline? Did you at all have, like, any concern, like, at that point in time? Do you remember, like, infusing Kevin Durant potentially ahead of the trade deadline this past regular season for the Rockets? Was there like any trepidation for you? Like, man, is this guy going to come in and maybe disrupt what's going on with the Rockets' young core, bringing drama or added attention, a distraction? Did you think about that at all?
No, I did, yes. And I think a couple things helped along the way. One was that, okay, the biggest drama we ever really saw from him in terms of perhaps not meshing right or what have you on the court, the biggest ones were with what? Okay, Draymond Green, who has actually physically assaulted various teammates. Okay, we got into it with Draymond Green. If anything, that's a check plus in his favor. In that maybe he got tired of Russell Westbrook being an absolute errantly thrown hand grenade 50% of the time he touches the basketball. Yeah. Okay. Oh no. Kevin Durant couldn't find a way to rein in and get the absolute best and most efficient version of Russell Westbrook. I don't blame Kevin Durant for that. And I certainly don't blame Kevin Durant for Draymond Green acting like the actual lunatic that Draymond Green is. So the big thing though really was that if Udoka worked with Kevin Durant in Brooklyn. He also worked with James Harden in Brooklyn. It looks like from that time in Brooklyn, Udoka had maybe a more positive assessment of exactly what Kevin Durant is than maybe James Harden, because Udoka did not seem to want to have any part of Harden coming back last year. So that part of it, the fact that I think Udoka is pretty good at instilling the right kind of culture, I don't think Udoka would have considered bringing Kevin Durant on if he didn't think that it was going to be the right kind of fit.
That's a good point.
Plus, what are they going to, oh, no, are they going to disrupt this finely tuned offense?
Yeah, yeah, no.
Is one, yeah.
That's a really good point, and I thought about it like this too. You know, you mentioning Udoka had a previous impression of James Harden and what kind of led to, you know, that situation not working at all in Brooklyn. But then, you know, when Udoka comes to Houston, he gets a different perspective and probably the same kind of opinion as well, or confirmation from Rafael Stone in regards to how things went when Harden was here. And for a loud minority, I think it is, at least if the Pender poll put out this weekend is any indication, when Sean Pendergast asked, hey, Rocket fans, do you want James Harden to return as a Houston Rocket? The results overwhelmingly no, in the near the 90th percentile saying that. I think that was just kind of further confirmation. But a guy like Kevin Durant, I just always remember, like, okay, the heel turn, right? Oklahoma City to Golden State. And what we learned about Kevin Durant in Golden State is maybe he didn't like the way that the offense was working with him being infused with Klay Thompson and Seth Curry and Draymond Green, obviously, but it worked well enough to where he's got two titles to show for it. The relationship that exists and has existed between Durant and Udoka is something I don't know that we're really going to be able to wrap our minds around until we see it in action ourselves in a few months.
Yeah, I think the where you still have to make improvements with your younger players, and where they still need to bring in some shooters from the outside. That's all part and parcel to all of this. It's Durant does make you immediately a better offense in some respects, but to fully capitalize on it, they've got more work to do.
Yeah,
you know, and Udoka has established obviously that he can get a good, really good defense out there. They can be great in transition. It's the half court offense, and what exactly does it look like? That part of it is it's as much on Udoka at this point as it is on Durant. I think that it's interesting though too if you think about the way the fan base has processed all of this. It's, you know, it's got a weird similarity to 2 years ago when there was a potential that J.J. Watt might come back and play, and everybody was, you know, the Texans fan base was going gaga over the prospect of J.J. coming back to play for a potentially playoff caliber team.
Yeah, I was too.
That was in 2023. Then all of a sudden in 2024, when it comes up again in the offseason, people are kind of like, well, it'd be a nice story, I suppose, but, you know, I'm not going to break my back or demand that it happens or anything. And I think with the Rockets, just the season that they had and then bringing Durant into the mix, by and large, has a lot of Rockets fans feeling like, all right, listen, nostalgia's great and all, but we made one big move. We don't need to get desperate to try to cobble together every big name that we can get at this point. These are, like, you actually genuinely want more of the less heralded moves to be the key thing to finish us off,
yeah,
more so than bringing in somebody that there are far more questions about what James Harden might do to the composition of the team and the culture than there are about Kevin Durant.
Oh, 100%. I think this is kind of the perfect scenario in which if you're going to infuse a big star into something, doing it in an off season is the best time to do it if you can do that. And the Rockets were definitely at a stage from an organizational standpoint to be patient and to wait, because who knows what it would have cost or what the Suns were asking for from teams during the season ahead of the trade deadline to make it work for Kevin Durant. So I'm glad the Rockets were patient in that regard. And it's we've gone through the James Harden. We've gone through the Russell Westbrook. Hell, Patrick Creighton asked me on Friday night. He was like, what do you think about Chris Paul? I'm like, no, please, no. We don't need to do that. We don't need to revisit that. There are certain guys where, you know, you draw a hard line in the sand. Chris Paul's not necessarily one of those guys, but I do not foresee at all Chris Paul leaving San Antonio from a role that he is in there. I heard, you know, reports like, hey, could he work well in New Orleans? Maybe, but you're going to ask Chris Paul all of a sudden to stop playing at least 30 minutes a night to, you know, being a role player behind Fred VanVleet as a backup point guard, albeit at the age of 40, still a lot of pride attached to a guy that played all 82 games last year for the Spurs. I don't know if Chris Paul's ready to, you know, take that next step in his career.
I think in trying to find the right balance between being a homegrown team, but then adding people from the outside, The Rockets have a young core that has so much potential. And you pair away from that young core when you get rid of Jalen Green to bring in Kevin Durant. And yet, that's if you want to have sustained success over a long period of time, like, this feels right. Like, this is a move that you can make right now where, okay, one big move for Durant where you keep so many of these guys in the young core together and work towards something that, yes, you're going to have to make some hard decisions financially in the next couple of years, but as much as you can retain that young core, that's your best bet at getting multiple opportunities at winning a championship.
You know, one of the results in this deal between the Suns and the Rockets trade outside of Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, and the 5 second round picks they dealt Phoenix's way was the 10th overall pick in last week's draft. Ended up being Kaman Maluwach, a player from the Sudanese, from the South Sudan. And Rich Paul is his agent. There's audio set that surfaced of Rich Paul in the car on the phone with Suns owner Matt Ishbia pre-draft. Take a listen.
If you guys keep 10, I'm going to mention a name and you tell me how much you like him. Kamon Malawak, if I can get him there.
A lot. That'd be my first choice.
Okay, done deal. That's all I need
to
hear.
Can you get there?
I'm going to try my best because you're our first choice. If he gets past Brooklyn, then yeah. But let me make those calls so I can let you do what you need to do.
All right, yeah, call me back when you hear.
I will. Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, so I play that audio because I got in the comments, man. I got in the comments whenever I saw this video, and people are like losing their minds about this video and this phone call that surfaced in that Rich Paul, sports agent, representing Kamon Malawak, and he ends up obviously going number 10 to the Phoenix Suns, but it's, hey, this guy's, you know, making this happen. He's calling other teams to, like, make this guy fall to number 10 to where the Phoenix Suns will draft him. Like, I'm thinking the whole time as I'm reading these comments of people losing their mind, talking about this is illegal and this shouldn't happen. Like, this is exactly what a sports agent should be doing. Am I wrong here?
I think that you're seeing how the sausage is made. And I think that that's how people have known that a lot of the super agents can and do operate, is that they can kind of dictate terms to teams. And I guess it was cool to watch for me. I understand why people don't like it, because they like the idea of, okay, in the draft, right, we're going to have our crack at all these guys who don't have any choice in the matter about where they go. And I guess my biggest takeaway is, all right, you just got to be sure that you have got an agent like Rich Paul. Because if you're an agent that's trying to do this type of stuff, like, frankly, if you're Deion Sanders acting as your son's representative, you better damn sure know what you're doing. And that's where I think guys like Rich Paul have a big advantage. Scott Boras in baseball has a big advantage in that, because he knows what's going on behind the scenes. People tell him honestly how they feel about players and everything, so he can kind of engineer the outcomes more so than other guys.
Yeah.
I looked at it as, all right, that's pretty a lot of people in the comments were wondering, like, why would he just show evidence of tampering? Like, because it's not tampering.
Right.
Nobody's under contract there. None of these guys are under contract. Hey, from the player's perspective, I like players. I don't like the draft just because it's very un-American that you got some guy that put himself. If you graduate top in your class at law school, you're going to get to pick which law firm you want to go to. If you graduate top in your class in a draft class, it's the exact opposite. You're like, nope, you're probably going to go to one of the worst teams in the league. Deal with it. So I like it when people maneuver around and use whatever leverage they do have. The biggest mistake is if you underestimate your leverage. Like Shador underestimated the leverage that he had.
Yeah, no, I think a great point, man. It's just, to me, I want my agent to find the best situation for me. And if the team really wants me, I'm going to do everything in my power to make that happen. And who's to say that Rich Paul, and maybe this is a little naive for me, isn't calling the other team saying, hey, look, man, you know, the best fit for my guy is really in Phoenix and he really wants to be there. Kind of trying to dissuade, like, maybe teams that are picking at 7, 8, or 9, whatever, to, yeah, okay, if he really didn't want to be here, then we'll look elsewhere.
Yeah, that's what, you know, the one agent who did a good job for is Lyle Collins. Do you remember the offensive lineman who became a person of interest in a murder case like 2 days before the draft? And Lyle Collins was a first-round talent, but he was sliding in the draft. And his agent, I think he admitted later that he was bluffing, but he had told teams, like, don't draft him past wherever in the draft, because we're not gonna sign that contract if you do that. So he kind of exerted leverage that maybe theoretically he didn't have, and the Cowboys ended up giving Lyle Collins a deal above where he ended up being drafted. That's exactly why you hire an agent, is to be able to do stuff like this.
Seth Payton and Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast this morning. Coming up next, while the Rockets locked up one of their young core this weekend, and Jabari Smith, has this young Astro done enough to make his team break protocol? We'll discuss next. Stay there.